Our guest for the sermon portion of the service this morning is Joseph Jackson, Jr., who made history as a member of Mississippi's 209. The group walked into Jackson City, Maine, Whites Only Library in 1961 and refused demands to go back to their own library. The police removed them in handcuffs, but the story made headlines nationwide. Mr. Jackson will share his personal odyssey growing up in the segregated South and making his life here in Orange County. Mr. Jackson has had a distinguished career in social work for the counties of Orange and L.A. He attended Tupelo College in Mississippi and then graduated from Cal State Fullerton. Let us welcome Mr. Joseph Jackson, Jr.
Giving honor to the Most High, to the minister who is the leader of such great people, to the church staff, to the congregation, to friends and visitors who came to hear the story about the two blue nine. I'm Joseph Jackson, Jr., the only child of deceased parents, Beatrice and Joseph Jackson, Sr. My mother was a domestic working for white families. My father was a janitor working for the National Distillery Company. I was born on April the 14th, 1937, in a social system called Jim Crow, with its social codes of behavior for Negroes in Memphis, Tennessee. Everything in Memphis, schools, churches, restaurants, libraries, hospitals, theaters, were segregated. I arrived on the campus of Tupelo College in September of 1960 after being awarded a ministerial scholarship by the Disciples of Christ, better known as the Christian Church. Being on the campus for several days, I attended a mass meeting. Mass meeting was held in the Wadsworth Chapel at night, sponsored by the NAACP, the acronym for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. It was the regional branch in Jackson, Mississippi. The featured speaker was the first NAACP field director, Mr. Medgar Wiley Everidge, who would be assassinated on June 12, 1963. Mr. Everidge indicated at the meeting that he had planned to desegregate the all-white Maine Public Library in downtown Jackson. And On that night, I became a member of the NAACP Youth Council, and I was also elected president that night of the NAACP Youth Council. On March the 27th, 1961, Evelyn Peters, Geraldine Edwards, Ethel Sawyer, Janice Jackson, Albert Lasseter, Meredith Andy, James Bradford, Alfred Cook, and yours truly, Joseph Jackson Jr., entered the all-white main public library to secure selected books for our school assignments. We did not receive assistance from the librarian or her staff until someone notified her that the Jackson Police Department would be coming. After receiving our books, we sat at various tables in the library, and soon the police chief, Officer Pierce, who was accompanied by several police officers, entered the building and ordered all of us to leave. And nobody moved. He then indicated, "You're under arrest for a breach of peace." We were escorted out of the building to awaiting police cars and taken to jail. During my incarceration in the jail cell, I wasn't worried because Mr. Evers had assured us that bond would be posted and we would be released on the same day of our arrest. Several hours later, lingering in that jail cell, I then reflected back upon the history of brutality, murder, and the numerous accounts of Negro lynchings in the state of Mississippi. That is when I had the thought of the inevitability of my death. I thought I was going to die. As a result of having those thoughts, I could not eat or sleep. We were soon released the next evening, and we appeared in the county, in the Hinds County Courthouse on April 1st for trial. We were convicted of a breach of the peace, fined $100 each, and given a 30-day suspended sentence by the judge. The spring semester of 1962, I had to drop out of Tubby Southern Christian College because my son was very ill back home in Memphis, and I had to return back to take care of my family. February the 11th, 1968, I arrived here in Orange County, and I settled in Santa Ana, in the city of Santa Ana, California. January of 1972, I was employed by the County of Orange in the Personnel Department as a Career Development Officer. August the 28th, I was employed by the Los Angeles County Probation Department as a Deputy Probation Officer. I retired on the 18th of March, 2002, with 29 years and 7 months of public service. I want to thank you for listening to my story about the Tougaloo Nine and also about our struggle in the civil rights movement for freedom and human dignity. Thank you very much. Thank you.
I am surprised so many times how many well-known or people who have really done important things live right in our midst here in Fullerton and in Orange County. So we're going to have Mr. Joseph Jackson Jr. answer questions, and it's just such an impelling story and an impelling thing that he did way back then in the early 60s.
I'm really glad to hear what you had to say today. I appreciate it very much. I want to ask you kind of a personal question, because like a lot of the civil right people, there's a point where you felt like your life is on the line here. And that's what made the change. How did you get the courage to put your life on the line?
Well, my courage began at the age of 10 or 11 when I was with my mother returning from Belzoni, Mississippi, the midway stop, rest stop of the Greyhound bus service was Clarksdale, Mississippi. And we were returning back to Memphis. And I recall, before we boarded the Greyhound bus, the bus driver said something to my mother. I don't know what the conversation was about. He turns around and hits her in the face and knocks her onto the gravel. When I turned my mother over, her whole face was bloodied. Realized I didn't have no recourse. And I vowed then that I would do everything that I could that was within my power to challenge the Jim Crow system that I had to return back to live and to endure in Memphis, Tennessee.
Thank you for sharing your story with us this morning. I really appreciate that. It's important for us to understand history, but it's also important for us to know where we're headed, so learn that as a lesson so that we can make better and wiser decisions as we move forward. Could you share with us, from your perspective, how do you see our country moving today? Are we moving towards an environment where we treat everyone with equal respect? Or do you see us backtracking some?
I see our country continuing to forge ahead and to face the challenges of diversity, the LGBT communities, and the racism and the bigotry and the opposition to a much more country that's striving towards a more perfect union. I see that we are continuing to make progress. And as long as people like your congregation, who is committed to equality and the love of humanity for all, I don't see how we can fail. But as many of the great leaders have said, we still have a lot of more work to do.
Mr. Jackson, I really admire your courage. And I was a freshman at Ole Miss in 1962 when James Meredith gave the first whack to the ball there. I'm sure I don't need to tell you what happened. But I was one of the few people that supported him, not as openly as I would like to have. But enough that I wrote a letter in his support of Newsweek magazine, and I wrote him a letter that he actually published in his book. But as a result, I got hate messages stuck on my dorm door, and make sense to me that Ozzie would transfer to Idaho the next year or so. So I just wondered, kind of, having been raised in the South, how do you manage to have a love of humanity that includes white people that did things like, you know, kiss your mother?
I can only attribute the love for all people of all nationalities to the universe, to God. Because I grew up in the Baptist Church from a small child. My mother sang in the church choir, so I was required to be there for Sunday school. Not only Sunday school, I was required to be there for the 11 o'clock service. Not only that, if the black people had to go to visit other churches in the evening, that was a 2 or 3 hour event. Not only that, I was required to return back at 6 p.m. in the evening for the Baptist Training Union. And not only that, I had to be there for the Sunday night service. So, I imagine that kind of spiritual socialization spoke to my heart. And I answered the call to the ministry, and I was ordained on October the 18th, 1958. And being a servant of the Most High, that's when my attitudes of hate changed.
And I'm curious about the medal that you're wearing around your neck. Could you speak to that?
Yes. This medal was given to all 9 of us by the Jackson Hines County Library System by the Executive Director, Dorothy Furr. And even though I was unable to make ceremony, it was held on August the 27th, 2014. Not only were we awarded the medal with honoring the Tougaloo 9 with our name on the back, on the front is the insignia of the library system. She also sent a video of the reenactment. Wow. Isn't that something? Young people reenacting us. And that was like an out of body experience when she said, and so-and-so was portraying Joseph Jackson Jr. So I also have a video of that. They were 9 young employees of the Jackson Hines Library. And Dorothy Fair said that 75% of the employees of the library system is African American. And Thank you. And their large constituencies are African American.
As a probation officer, did you see a divide in the opportunities for rehabilitation and being able to get the people you were trying to help divided along race lines still?
Like these questions are getting much more difficult to answer. Unfortunately, yes. Unfortunately. And I really don't know when that is going to change. But I specialize in juvenile delinquency, and I was placed in a very, very important position as a deputy probation officer specializing in juvenile delinquency. And there was a program known as the Intercept Program. And the detectives had the attitude that every African-American teenager or Latino teenager, whether they deserve to have been incarcerated in juvenile hall or not, they were going. And as a result of that kind of racist attitude, poor judgment, Los Padrinos Juvenile Hall was becoming overcrowded with minorities. So the county created a program known as the Intercept Program, and I became the first Intercept officer to have been assigned at the Lakewood Sheriff Station, the only black there. And my job was to review the cases that would be presented to me with regards to detention. From Lakewood Station, I was on call to Downey PD. Then I was transferred to Norwalk Sheriff Station. I was on call to Whittier PD. Finally, I was assigned to Pico Rivera Sheriff Station, and that is when I knew that I was in the right place at the right time, because the son of this particular Hispanic mother was not really terribly involved in delinquency. He was more or less a follower, wanted to become members of a gang. And he was arrested for burglary. And the criteria, the probation criteria knew that I could release him. But I enjoyed my job because I was the intermediary between the detectives with their racist attitudes, biasness, and the parents. So I had the opportunity to counsel many youngsters. And I told that young man, son, your mother's doing the very best that she can. And if you come back in here again, I'm going to lock you up. She's doing the very best. The mother called me maybe a week later and said, Mr. Jackson, I thank you for what you, how you helped my son. I knew you thought that the Lord was going to give you a church, but let me tell you one thing, Mr. Jackson. What you are doing is a ministry. My son is no longer following around and wanting to associate with gangbangers, and he's making all A's in school.
My family is from the South, Arkansas, and as a young child, I witnessed flagrant discrimination against blacks. It was out in the open, it was direct, and it wasn't nice at all. It made it very difficult for me when I visited later on in high school to even talk to many of my relatives. But the question I have for you today is prejudice now masked and looked at differently? Called something else. People that were very, very loud and direct about it now have gone what I consider to be, to a certain degree, talking about it differently. The criticism of our president, which would most people can see, is often based upon the fact that he's black. Other prejudices against other people, for instance, the LGBT right canary, have been masked in something else. Do you agree with me or am I wrong?
I'm on your side, brother. That was why I said to the young lady when she asked me in terms of what direction that our country was headed in. I have many historical documents of black history. I enjoy reflecting back on our history and how far we've come. And to answer your question, on this program, Mr. Hefner asked James Farmer, who is the executive director of CORE, Congress of Racial Equality, and Dr. Wyatt T. Walker, the chief of staff and executive assistant of Dr. King, and Mr. Hefner pretty much posed the same question to these two great civil rights leaders. And their answer really brought it home in terms of what we're dealing with now, sir. Both of the civil rights leaders said that we, during the civil rights movement, focused more on Jim Crow, more on desegregation, but not enough on racist attitudes. That's a concept. That's a belief. And what makes it much more a challenge for people like yourself growing up in Arkansas, as well as others, we have to continue to challenge those racist attitudes now as they exist because of the, it's subtle, the subtlety of it. That's the mask. In the South, growing up like you did, we looked the white man in the eye and we knew he was a bigot. And we told him so. But when it's masked, sir, you can't do that. And that's why it continues to remain a challenge. And I believe it will continue to remain a challenge on our part.
I wonder, in what ways did being a minister help you in this effort?
Well, as I told you, I'm a student of black history. I'm proud of where we've come from and where we are continuing to go. And to answer your question, sir, it was the ministers, always the ministers, even during slavery, that were the spokesmen for our people. They were always on the forefront of progress, and they gave their lives. And as a minister, that's where I wanted to be. I idolized the great spiritual leaders because they took the lead. And I was blessed to have been called by the Most High to continue that legacy.
I'd like to know what happens, what became of the Tupelo Nine and your effort to integrate the library?
Well, what became of the Tupelo Nine? We chose not to get involved in further demonstration because the judge told us that now if you return back out there on those streets, you're going to be sent to Parchment, the state penitentiary. And so
We went on with our lives, finished our degrees, and returned to our various occupations. And some are in Missouri, some are in Alabama, Flint, Michigan, Alfred Cook, James Bradford remained in Mississippi, Tougaloo. Very, very close friend of mine, Geraldine Edward Hollis, is an author. Her book is titled Back to Mississippi because she grew up in Natchez, Mississippi. And so we're the only two really that keep in touch. She lives in Stockton, California, and she is active in keeping the history of the Tougaloo Nine alive. But that's about the extent of it. And so I will definitely be giving her a call, letting her know what an exciting experience this has been for me.
Reverend Mr. Jackson, I'm Stephen Burr, and I'm the interim pastor here. And we are all, I'm kind of drawing it to close as I tend to do. We are all honored to have you among us and to inspire us and challenge us to be true to our faith and to one another. And I want to thank you and your family for all that you, for your willingness to come and speak to us. And I'm personally reminded of my call and how important it is to live faithfully and courageously as you have done. Touché.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Even Loretta Sanchez gave you an honor, yes. Recognition of your great activities.